Good evening, everyone. I'm Trevor Morris, president of the Smithers District Chamber of Commerce. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge that we are gathered on the traditional unceded territory of the Wet'suwet'en people, specifically the Gidimdan clan. We are grateful for the opportunity to live, work, learn, and do business on this land. On behalf of the Chamber of Commerce, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to all of you for attending this important event. We are proud to host tonight's All Candidates Forum with the support of the Smithers Public Library, who are here as timers tonight. We'd also like to thank School District 54 for making this Della Herman Theatre available for tonight's event, as well as the Northern BC Real Estate Board for covering some of the event expenses. We also appreciate the candidates for contributing to some of the costs, and most importantly, for being here tonight to participate in this democratic process. Of course, none of this would be possible without the technical expertise of Taylor Sound and Lighting, who ensure that everything runs smoothly behind the scenes. I would have no idea how to make all this stuff work. It'd be bad if I tried. As a nonprofit organization, the Chamber of Commerce is committed to creating opportunities that strengthen both our business and broader community. We believe that events like this, open public forums, are essential for encouraging civic engagement and fostering open dialogue. These forums provide a democratic opportunity for voters to hear directly from those seeking office, gaining insights into their policies, visions, and ideas that will shape the future of our town, region, and province. An informed electorate is the cornerstone of a healthy democracy, and tonight's forum is an important part of that process. The role of an MLA is vital in advancing the priorities of our region. Decisions made in Victoria affect our local businesses, families, and the quality of life for all residents. That's why it's so important to have conversations like the one we're having tonight, where we can ask tough questions, share concerns, and hear directly from the candidates about their plans to address the issues that matter most to us. As we gather here, we encourage you all to listen carefully and remain engaged throughout the election process. The decisions we make as a community will have long-lasting effects, and tonight's forum offers some insights that we need to make informed choices. Once again, thank you to the candidates for your courage to put your names forward and join here tonight. Also, thank you to you, our audience, and the live stream for joining. Together, we can shape the future of Smithers and our region in a way that reflects the values and priorities of our community. Following this forum, we also encourage you to take time to stream the provincial leaders' debate, which is taking place online. Enjoy the evening, and now it is my pleasure to introduce our moderator for the night. Please welcome George Whitehead, an outstanding chamber volunteer director for over 19 years.
Thank you, Trevor. Welcome, everyone. We're just going to quickly let everyone know the agenda for the evening. So we're going to open up with the candidates giving their opening remarks. All three of them get 3 minutes to speak in their opening remarks. Then we're going to move to a 30-minute question period with the pre-submitted questions. We had over 400 pre-submitted questions as of yesterday, so if your question didn't make it in that 30 minutes, we're truly sorry. There was a few. That being said, I'm sure the candidates afterwards or at their campaign office or online will be happy to answer your personal question. After the pre-submitted question period, we're going to have a 20-minute power round where we answer from Slido. So Slido is an app we're going to use this evening. QR code is on the screen behind me. If you need some help with that, we do have some volunteers that will go about the room helping you out. Slido lets you submit the question. You can vote up a question if there's one there that you like. Just simply go on there and like it. And that'll allow the people that have joined us online this evening to participate as well. After that, the candidates are given a 3-minute closing statement as well. So, and that, folks, is the agenda. So we're going to get going because every minute wasted is a question lost, and there's a few. Before we jump into that, I just want to point out too, Wilhelm Marsden did send his regrets. Unfortunately, he's been waylaid in Vancouver and isn't able to attend this evening. And next up is the opening remarks. So we drew names, and first up is Sharon.
Good evening, everyone. For those of you that don't know me, I was born and raised here in the Bulkley Valley. My early years were on a farm in Quick. People have asked, why am I returning to politics? This is my home. I could no longer stand by and watch the undermining of our communities and rural lifestyle that I love. This election is about the everyday individual, the small business owner, the farmer, the hairstylist, the grocery clerk, doctors and nurses that are called to work extremely long shifts because their hospitals are understaffed. BC has a ballooning debt with no end in sight. Contrary to EB and Trudeau, the budget will not balance itself. The NDP has increased the debt by $4.7 billion for this fiscal cycle. Mr. Eby calls me extreme. Well, I am. I'm extremely concerned about health care, education, the decriminalization of drugs, the economy, and crime. Mr. Cullen signed a petition against LNG in 2016 while he was a federal MP after he was elected as our provincial MLA to represent Bulkley Valley Stikeen. He has changed his position. He said this project would not have happened without the BC NDP. By providing concessions to enable the project to proceed, the NDP government has negotiated a reduced rate for carbon tax for the project at $50 per ton. They would pay $154 million per year in carbon tax, but at the reduced rate of $30 per ton, they would pay only $92.4 million. So, Mr. Cullen, do you support the carbon tax or not? Who is paying the difference? It's obviously now left with the taxpayer. When you were asked to have a reduced rate for BC residents, the answer was no. It is clear that the EB Trudeau government know that the carbon tax is hurting everyday citizens and crippling the economy, which is why eliminating the carbon tax is the first step into getting our economy back on track and bringing a much-needed financial relief to BC residents. Reduction in red tape and with a single-use permitting process, we will be able to encourage investment dollars back to BC. We'll invest in post-secondary education funding, which will be reallocated into areas that promote incentivize training in essential fields, such as medicine, engineering, and skilled trades. The northern lifestyle includes food production. The Conservative Party aims to reduce reliance on imported agricultural products and support locally grown food products that will benefit our communities. A Conservative government will fight for mandatory minimum sentencing for violent offenders, hire more sheriffs and judges to reduce the court backlog, create a new statutory court to hold trials for minor offenses within a week, and support rehabilitation programs for people addicted to drugs. The NDP government has been in power for 7 years, and we can clearly see what that has given us. Continuing on the same path will only bring more of the same.
Up next is Rod Taylor.
Thank you to all of you who made this forum possible tonight. It's an important part of our great democratic tradition of open debate on important issues. And who decides these issues? You do. The laws made in Victoria reflect the choices you and I make in a voting booth, or they should at least. Tonight you will hear some opinions about those choices. We'll be discussing policies that affect the future for your children and grandchildren. As candidates and as voters, each of us has a responsibility to stand up for the things we value most and to vote according to conscience. The person chosen to represent you in Victoria and those who form the next government should represent all the people of BC. Over the past 7 years, we have had a top-down government that has imposed on BC residents policies made in New York at the UN or in Geneva by the WEF. During COVID, we had policies and mandates imposed on us by Ottawa, by Big Pharma, and by the WHO. The NDP government, under which we have suffered for 7 years, has pushed its agenda and divided us based on race or ethnicity, gender and gender ideology, worldviews, and economic status. That must change. It's time for politicians in Victoria to listen to the people. As MLA and leader of CHP BC, I'll push to end BC's carbon tax. It's a major cause of inflation, does nothing for the environment. I'd rehire and compensate the doctors and nurses unjustly terminated during COVID for daring to question the government's lies. I would end BC's failed drug policies, the so-called safe injection sites and safe supply. We can't help addicts break the downward cycle of drug abuse by supplying drugs and enabling their self-destructive behaviors. To alleviate the housing crisis, I'd end the foreign purchase of homes and farmland in BC. BC properties should be owned by BC residents. On the issue of protecting life, the CHP is the only party committed to defending human life at all stages. We would end the use of taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions, doctor-assisted suicides, and gender reassignment surgeries. We would use those funds instead for real health care, hip replacements, maternity care, and providing more spaces in hospitals, long-term care, and assisted living facilities. And we'd end the abusive SOGI regime in BC public schools. Our young people deserve better. They need academic and trade skills, not gender confusion and socialism being pushed by the NDP. I look forward to your questions tonight. By following basic principles of honesty, integrity, and justice with a good dose of common sense, I'm sure we can find the answers together. Thank you.
Thank you. And lastly, we have Nathan Cullen.
Thank you. I'm Irish. I do my best speaking when I'm standing. And I want to say thank you, first, to the Chamber for hosting this event. Also, to also acknowledge being here on Wet'suwet'en territory, Gidimt'en Clan. I'm Nathan Cullen. I have been serving as your MLA for the past 4 years, which has been an incredible honor, responsibility, and privilege. And they have been tumultuous years. We have faced a global epidemic. We have faced unprecedented forest fires, floods, and drought. We have seen historic inflation across the globe and interest rates set by the Bank of Canada that have only contributed to the housing crisis in a very popular place, British Columbia, where a lot of people want to come to live. I believe our community, much like our province, is at its best when we do things together. By its very definition, government is the things that we do together that we can't do alone. Setting up policing services, a healthcare system, an education system. And I think it's wonderful that you all came here tonight. And I think of the people who are normally occupying this theater, the young people of our community. And as was said by our moderator, so many of the decisions that we make in Victoria affect us today, of course, but many of them affect the people that don't tend to come to these debates. So engaging with young people, talking to them about the importance of our democracy, especially at this time when we see it as so fragile and jeopardized around the world. I'm proud of the work that we have done as a government. Of course, not perfect, and much more to do. But we recovered fastest and best out of the pandemic economically, creating more jobs than any large province in this country. We were able to make investments, like creating the new school at Walnut Park, the commitment to 215 long-term care beds for our seniors who are deserving of good care and need that commitment from us as a government. The $250 million Resource Benefit Alliance Agreement negotiated between the province and all the municipalities here in the Northwest to better share the benefits that come from resource extraction. The commitment to a $1,000 household tax benefit, which is immediate upon us forming government if we are able to do so. It's a privilege to be with you. I'm glad to be with my friends across the way who I've known for many years. Commitment to public service and public life isn't easy. You get exposed to a lot of things, and in our social media world, a lot of criticisms as well. But this engagement, this dialogue that we're having tonight, I very much look forward to. And thank you so much to, again, our moderators and our hosts, and for you all for coming out tonight. Thank you very much.
So up next is the pre-submitted questions. Once again, if your question didn't get asked, I truly am sorry, but we only have so much time, and there was over 400 of them. So we're going to start at this end of the table, work our way across. Each candidate has two rebuttal cards, so if they want to speak to one of the questions that wasn't asked of them or offer a counter proposal to one of their colleagues up here, they're welcome to do that twice. I'd like to thank the crowd, both in person and online, for their civility through this. Greatly appreciated everyone listening to the answers and treating everyone with respect. So without any further ado, first question for Nathan Cullen. How will your party manage the urgency for dealing with the climate and biodiversity crisis?
So the first thing is to acknowledge that there is a crisis, that there is a problem. And as I mentioned in my opening comments, we have seen not this past fire season, which was bad, but nothing compared to the year before. Just to put that one in context, 14 times more wood was burned in the province of British Columbia by fire than is milled and manufactured through all the forestry that takes place. So the scale, the intensity of the fires, the droughts, and things like atmospheric rivers is real. We have to trust in the science and not call climate change a hoax, which some leaders in this province have done. If we don't elect people that believe in science, how can we possibly expect them to act upon what the science is telling us? And when it comes to climate change, having a big polluter price on carbon, taking it off consumers if the federal government backs away, and also incentivizing us to have that green, clean economy that we know creates jobs and is less impact on our planet.
Thank you very much. This question is for Sharon Hartwell. What investments or reforms will you prioritize to improve mental health and addiction services, especially in the Bulkley Valley that's facing rising substance abuse and safe supply challenges?
Thank you, George. I think, first of all, we have to recriminalize the drugs and get them off the streets. We have committed to building safe homes for these people for rehabilitation and hiring qualified professionals to help them through their addiction process. So continuing to give them drugs to do that is certainly not helping, in my opinion, and it's going to be a long, hard haul. There's going to be so many issues around the drugs. I spoke to a lady down on the fair, and she said she was looking after her grandson, who was born with autism because the mother was on drugs. So now she's going to be looking after these children. She's going to be looking after this child, and there's no supports. They can't get supports for these children. So it's a complex issue, and we have to start with rehabilitation and getting the drugs off the street and getting a place for these people to live.
Thank you. Next question is for Rod Taylor. As an MLA, you're expected to represent and speak for the entire constituency. How will you stand up for the rights and dignity of the LGBTQ2+ community throughout your term, given that queer members of our community deserve the same level of dignity, support, and acceptance? How will you personally ensure their needs and voices are heard and respected?
Thank you for the question. The God-given design for human beings is male and female. We are born either male or female, and the recent ideological shift in this category, forcing or coercing young people to make bad decisions for their health and their lives, which is causing many to have regrets after. There's a lot of detransitioners out there. But I would represent all people because we are to love one another. We're to love our neighbor as ourselves. We wouldn't pick favorites, but I would not be promoting policies that would encourage the sexual confusion that is being pushed in our schools today.
Next question is for Nathan Cullen. Will your government prioritize resource development in BC? If so, what specific actions will you take to ensure economic growth while addressing environmental concerns?
I was speaking with the head of one of the largest mining firms in the world a few weeks ago. They had just recently sold a number of their properties in Ontario and Quebec, but were maintaining two here in northwestern BC in Tahltan Territory, north of here. And I asked him why, and he said because of the agreements that have been achieved between their company, the Tahltan, and the provincial government, predictability and certainty are significant, and the ability to raise money, the ability to invest, is also significant. There are a whole myriad of reasons why the reconciliation effort is required: educational, moral, health, historical. One of them is also economic. Our ability to offer some path forward that is legally durable and strong is the very thing that the resource companies in Northern BC and throughout BC require to make those kinds of investments.
Next question is for Sharon. What specific initiatives will your government introduce to support small businesses in recovering from intense economic challenges in the current business landscape?
Well, first of all, we're going to cut a lot of red tape so people can get back into business. And dealing with, there's so many criminal elements in the communities right now that they're struggling. People have had a hard time through COVID and getting back. So a lot of them shut their businesses and they're struggling to remain open. So having some kind of economic development to support them is crucial. And getting small business loans for them to do that will be helpful as well. But the 4 years that they were shut down, they went into great debt to do that. And now with the crime on the street, they're having a terrible time just trying to keep their doors open. So we have to deal with that issue as well. This is not going well.
This question for Rod. Local infrastructure in communities like Smithers, Telqua, Hazleton are crumbling. Can you specifically state how much funding you will allocate to these municipalities? Additionally, where exactly will these funds come from?
I'm sorry, could you repeat
Certainly. The question? Local infrastructure in communities like Smithers, Telqua, Hazleton are crumbling. Can you specifically state how much funding you will allocate to these municipalities? Additionally, where exactly will these funds come from?
Well, you know what? There's only one taxpayer. And when we pay our local taxes, municipal taxes, provincial taxes, federal taxes, I mean, most of us are working over half the year before we get a dollar for ourselves. We're paying taxes. But there's an illusion that we can run a municipality or a province on handouts from higher levels of government. I think that I'd like to see a return to local decision-making, local taxation, local resource, so that we decide for ourselves that we don't have to build. You know, a lot of these communities think that they're going to be building an arena or a swimming pool or whatever with money, free money from the province. But, you know, we're paying for one in Cranbrook, they're paying for one in Fort St. John. I'd rather see those decisions made locally where politicians would have to answer to the taxpayers for what they spend.
Nathan, what measures will you take to address the risks posed by climate change to Northern BC's infrastructure, such as wildfires and severe storms?
So this is an important question because folks remember, I don't know about you, but I was not familiar with the term atmospheric river before it happened. And it's such an intense and extremely expensive weather event, north of $5 billion worth of damage done. We need to make what we build back resilient to the effects of climate change, to changing weather patterns that we see in our forestry sector, to the floods and the intensity of what comes. To Rod's earlier point, the whole idea of provincial taxation is that we're able to raise funds collectively, because I don't know how long it would take us to build a $300 million long-term care facility in Smithers if we only had taxpayers in Smithers footing the bill. What we do collectively is to the benefit of other communities, of course, and also to our own benefit. That's the idea of having a provincial government. And that's what enables us to be able to supply the funding that we've seen for a number of projects around the Bulkley Valley, which I think are really, really beneficial to our community.
Sharon wants to use her first rebuttal card.
Well, I guess I don't know if it's a rebuttal, but certainly all the years in local government that I spent, we worked very, very hard at trying to build resources up, have companies build wealth in the province so that we could have some of that return to our communities in the north. So this is another reason. It's not just tax dollars are going to do that. We want resource development funds. We want to build a strong economy. We want people back to work. We have robust things in British Columbia, especially Northwest, that we can use and get people back to work. We want strong jobs. We want a strong economy. We want people to, the communities to be prosperous again. So we can do that collectively by encouraging resource development and having people go back to work.
Okay, and this question is also for Sharon here. Given the importance of reconciliation and Indigenous land rights to many British Columbians, how does your party plan to address the long-standing issues of land ownership and historical injustice?
Well, we have committed to revisiting the DRIPA and committed to having the funding principles of UNDRIP kept. There has been two bands that have contested this in the province and said that they weren't treated fairly. We want a proper consultation process to go through where all stakeholders are asked and participate in the consultation process. After that, we can sit down and move forward with everything. We believe that economic reconciliation is the best way to do this for all parties involved.
This question is for Rod Taylor. What is your party's priority for tackling escalating crime and public safety concerns? And what concrete measures will you implement?
Well, on the issue of drugs and, you know, tent cities, drugs, mental illness, a lot of these things are related. And I think really we have a dearth of a sense of purpose. People are ending up because they're like basically not fitting into society, not finding a place in society, maybe not finding good jobs or having difficulty affording things. And there's also the broken home aspect must be addressed. You know, when there's a divorce, you need two houses instead of one. So that affects the housing affordability and the broken relationships. So all of this leads to, as we know, in our own community and other places, crime increases when there's people on drugs and living from hand to mouth in desperate situations. And so, but we would end the legal drug supply and help people who are facing mental issues to come to grips with the situation they're in. Thank you.
This question is for Nathan. Medical services in BC are centralized in hubs. Our hubs are PG and Terrace. Accessing these services are a problem for those outside of the hubs. The medical bus and the north bus both arrive at the hubs late in the afternoon and leave again early the next morning, offering no opportunity for an appointment. So the buses run empty. If you use the bus, you have to stay two nights for your appointment. What is your government going to do to improve accessibility to medical services in rural BC?
I'm so glad this question was asked. I think I met the lady yesterday who was hoping to ask it. Two things. The BC North bus, funded by a previous government, we've maintained, needs to be combined with the medical help bus. We need to have it the frequency more often. There's been insurance problems that have been in the way, some resistance, but we think that path is clear now. Very proud of the new hospital that we funded, $650 million hospital in Terrace. It's outstanding. We need a new hospital here in Smithers, which is the project right after long-term care. We are next in line. We allowed other communities quite benevolently to move ahead of us in Fort St. James and Burns Lake. It is now time for Smithers to get a new hospital. The centralizing of care means that we have to have transportation. And we have committed and made possible that all the costs of getting to a medical appointment, your gas, your hotel, and flights, are now covered by the provincial government for rural residents, which is a huge benefit to a lot of families who live in the north.
Thank you. Sharon, the Mineral Tenure Act has been deemed unconstitutional given the lack of consultation required to state claims in British Columbia. With the Supreme Court now mandating reform to the claim staking process, how would your government move forward with modernizing the Mineral Tenure Act in the interests of all British Columbians and consistent with its legal duties to Indigenous nations?
I'm sorry, George, I missed the beginning of that. I didn't hear it.
Sure. The Mineral Tenure Act has been deemed unconstitutional given the lack of consultation required to state claims in British Columbia. With the Supreme Court now mandating reform to the claim staking process, how would your government move forward with modernizing the Mineral Tenure Act in the interests of all British Columbians
and consistent with its legal duties to Indigenous nations.
You said federal?
No, the Provincial Mineral Tenure Act.
Okay, I thought you said federal. First of all, we want to cut red tape and get back to basics. There's so many levels, and we want to go to a one permitting process for projects on the ground. And when people are waiting 5 and 6 and 7 years to get their permit approved, it's just untenable. So they're challenging it, and I think that that's right. So we need to sit down and have that discussion and look where we can cut red tape and get these people back to work and open the minds and the projects that they're looking for.
Thank you. Rod, how would you encourage more business investment, job creation, and support for addressing labor shortages?
It's kind of funny. There's always people looking for workers, and yet there's sometimes people that seem to not have gainful employment. There's a lot of things we need to do, but we do need resource development is one of the things here in the North. I've worked, as you know, in the lumber industry for 25 years, and I think that renewable timber is one of the things that we should really be focusing on. One of the tragedies in the last number of years is that a lot of our timber and sawmilling production has been directed overseas. Raw log exports, we're sending a lot of our work overseas, and so I'm always been a fan of value added here, and that would apply to oil and gas, water, coal, whatever, and timber. We should be doing the processing here, which would create more jobs here, keep more money in Canada and in our province. In terms of pipeline, yeah, I guess I'm out of time. Thanks.
Nathan, what steps will you take to address the housing affordability crisis, particularly in rural and northern communities?
Yeah, so we're building rental units right now at 4 times the pace that Ontario is. My colleagues have talked about red tape a number of times. One of the challenges we had is municipal zoning laws. Much of the province within our municipalities is zoned for single-family dwellings. And if anyone wants to put a duplex on, increase housing with a carriageway, you have to go through often a very, very lengthy process. Public hearings can take months and oftentimes years. So we changed that across the board for the province. That will greatly and has already greatly increased the supply. We've also put a small 2% speculation tax on those that are just flipping houses, constantly flipping, and using a house as an investment to make more money rather than what it should be, which is a home. That freed up 25,000 apartments in Vancouver alone. Unfortunately, some parties want to cancel that, which I have no idea why. We're into homes for people, not for speculators, and increasing the speed with which we can approve housing at our local government level is exactly what the housing developers have asked for.
Sharon, how will your government address rising costs and make life more affordable for British Columbians, particularly in northern BC?
Economic development. We've talked about getting mines permitted. We've talked about resource development. We've talked about all these kind of things, and this is what we need. We need to have our communities healthy and safe, and we need to have more people back at work, and people are struggling. We need education for these people. Some of them are not educated enough to go back to their jobs. Kids are not being encouraged to go back and take up trades. So we're going to have to get education back up and running, and I've had conversations with teachers that are struggling with the education system as it is because it's not adequate. And I think we have to start at the ground level and get the kids interested in different things in school and get them educated so they have some kind of passion going forward for what they want to do.
Okay, we have 2 rebuttals, so I think Rod beat you to the draw there, Nathan.
Well, there's one really simple way to bring cost of a lot of things down, inflation, the inflationary cycle, and the cost of building a home, all kinds of things would come down if we would get rid of the carbon tax. The carbon tax does nothing for the environment, but it raises the cost of everything you buy. If you buy nails to build a house, you're going to be paying a carbon tax on that. You buy food from the store locally, you're going to be paying a carbon tax on that. You heat your home, you're going to be paying a carbon tax. And federally, you know, we're even paying taxes on taxes. It's just something that we need to do. BC, I guess Eby has said that he would drop the carbon tax if Justin Trudeau approves. I don't think we need to wait for Justin Trudeau to approve anything. We should be making decisions in BC that are good for BC residents.
Nathan, thank you.
I love you, Rod. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of how taxes work, in the sense that if BC, like other provinces, were to not have a carbon tax and the federal tax still exists, the carbon tax still exists. You can't unilaterally drop a tax that's backstopped by the federal government, hence why Mr. Eby talked about this. But the question was around cost of living. When John Rustat was in cabinet, in the Liberal cabinet, not only did they introduce MSP premiums that charged us each every month, they doubled it over his time sitting at the table. The largest tax cut to the middle class in BC history was when the NDP government cut MSP payments to individual people. Affordable childcare is what helps cost of living. When we're able to say to people that our public insurance system at ICBC charges an 18-year-old driving a Toyota half what it does in the private system in Alberta, and Mr. Rustat says, let's go the private route for car insurance, I am baffled at a time of high prices why we'd want to charge people more to insure the cars for themselves and their kids. It makes no sense and is pure ideology.
So next question is for Rod. What specific changes or investments would you implement to improve healthcare services across the province?
Well, thank you for that question. First of all, we would rehire and compensate all the doctors and nurses fired by the NDP under their brutal and unscientific COVID mandates. We would put them back to work, and they were fired. They weren't even able to get employment insurance they paid into. They should be compensated for that. The NDP basically destroyed the healthcare system. We have had all kinds of maternity room closures, emergency room closures, because we have run out of people. And some of the people being so-called invited back into the government, into the healthcare system, don't even want to come back. And they're being invited back in with a poison pill. They have to sign a statement saying all their vaccine status, which they've never had to do before. So we would put them back to work for sure, for starters. And we would invest in, as Nathan did mention, investing in long-term care facilities and so on. That is something that we have to do no matter who's in government.
Nathan, what steps will your party take to reduce the cost of doing business in British Columbia?
There's a couple of things. Small businesses at least pay a 2% tax rate right now. The investment cycle, we know in certain sectors, the resource sector, for example, in mining in particular, you need larger companies being able to provide the incentive and bonus for some of the smaller exploration companies to be able to thrive in behind. We also need clear legal guidelines. A question was asked earlier about the Mineral Tenure Act reform. The clarity of it is there has been a court decision and there is a clock running. By March of next year, we have to reform the Mineral Tenure Act to be in line with rights and title reconciliation issues. This is not about red tape. This is legal obligations to First Nations people. This is serious business. This can't be flittered away with a statement or a slogan. Our government has been working with the mining sector and First Nations about how we reform the Mineral Tenure Act, because if we do not, or we do it badly, it will be devastating to the exploration sector in BC.
Sharon, yes. What will you do to advance economic reconciliation with Indigenous communities and ensure meaningful participation in economic development?
Thank you, George. After having some conversations recently with some of the First Nations, they want consultation. They want to sit down. Some of them think that they aren't being treated fairly. So having full disclosure, having full consultation process with them, finding out what they want, and a lot of them want other things added to that rather than compensation. They want education for their people. They want their kids to grow up and have a healthy lifestyle. So we're going to have to go back to DRIPA. We're going to have to revisit that, and we're going to have to look at that and sit down with them and find out. All this divisiveness and talk to them about us has got to stop. We're all Canadians. We're all people. We live in the same area. We benefit most when we work together. So sitting down and having those meaningful conversations, I think, is important. It's not just one or the other. The outcome has to be for all of us or it's not going to be successful. And they want to start with the education with their communities and have a full disclosure and full consultation process along with everybody else at the table. And I fully agree.
Rod, how does your party plan to support the transition to cleaner energy sources while ensuring that BC's resource-based communities remain economically viable?
Thank you for the question. I, of course, we all want cleaner energy, and I think the industry has been moving in that direction for years, partly because they can save money doing it. There is an illusion that carbon dioxide is somehow a pollution. It is not. Carbon dioxide is a natural part of our atmosphere. It's plants need it to grow. And so I think this whole, talking about carbon dioxide being a problem causing climate change is an illusion. Yeah, many scientists say it is, but there are many scientists who say, no, that's baloney. But we all want to use our resources carefully, wisely. I think there's, when we moved here, there was a lot of wood stoves in various houses, and sometimes in the winter the air was kind of smoky. We personally like wood heat, but we are moving, I think, in a direction of cleaner energy already.
Nathan, does your party have a clear path to balancing the provincial budget? If so, how and when do you plan to achieve this?
Yeah, the provincial budget in the 7 years that the NDP has been in power ran surpluses in the first three. COVID hit in the fourth, then ran deficits back to surplus and then back to deficit. And it's significant. The deficit is significant right now, the largest in our province's history. And that's concerning to me. We are also in a strong position. We have the best GDP to debt ratio of any province in Canada right now, with the exception of, I believe, New Brunswick. So that means our borrowing capacity is strong because the amount of money that our province is able to pull in is strong. We need to be able to pull back to more of a balanced regime. The question is, if you're going to take in cuts, as the Conservatives have suggested in their healthcare plan of $4 billion, where do the cuts come? If we're going to cut, then you can't also say, well, then we're going to fund long-term care and we're going to build new hospitals and we're going to hire more nurses. We've hired 14,000 new nurses in the last little while. We need to hire more. And so that's the challenge that you face, anyone would face as a provincial government.
Sharon with the rebuttal.
Well, I guess that's my last rebuttal card, but Nathan, you know very well, it has been said over and over and over again, there are no cuts to healthcare coming from the Conservative Party. It is completely untrue and it has been stated repeatedly and repeatedly, yet the NDP keeps saying we're cutting healthcare, we're investing in healthcare. So I'm not sure where you're finding these numbers. I'd like to know where you're finding them from.
Sure. I'll come back to you.
Well, you told me that last July too, and you still haven't given me the answers for the budget that I asked for, so I'm still waiting for that number.
Question is for Sharon. As an MLA, how will you support local governments in managing rising costs, including public safety, policing, infrastructure maintenance, and housing development?
Wow, that's a mouthful, that one.
Covers every topic, that
it
one.
It sure does. And having been in local government for the better part of 20 years, that's kind of refreshing to go back there. The Conservative government has committed to putting $1 billion into infrastructure. And as we talked about with resource development, I firmly believe that the resource, when they're extracting the resources, minerals, forestry, whatever it may be, the portion of that has to come back to the communities for investment. Back in the day, when I was still the mayor, they had appurtenancy clauses for communities, so the wood and the fiber was attached to those mills for security for the communities. And that is now gone. So you're seeing trucks up and down the road, traveling, which is not carbon neutral, all the way from Dease Lake, all the way down to Quesnel, when we've got mills along the way that they could be used from. So I'm not sure how that happened, but it certainly wasn't under the NDP or under the Conservative Party that did that. So investing in infrastructure is number one, and we're committed to doing that, and having a robust province with economic development that's going to help stabilize communities.
Rod, how will your government collaborate with industry to establish frameworks for both economic growth and environmental sustainability?
Well, I think you have to put environmental sustainability at the top of the list and make sure that there is that work. We have, you know, right now in this province, we have still raw sewage going into the ocean in places. And, you know, when we're concerned about talking about pushing electric vehicles, which we don't even have enough electricity to run them, you know, that's going down the wrong trail for environmentally being responsible. Industries, I mean, when they take on a contract or take on a project, they would obviously have to pass through every environmental criteria that we have. So I don't know, but they need to have the certainty that there's going to be a business for them before they invest and build the infrastructure. And I'm not sure right now that's the case in British Columbia.
Nathan, as an MLA, how will you keep Two-Spirit LGBTQIA+ and transgender individuals safe and supported in our communities and in the province?
By actually backing up the notion of loving another human being by loving another human being regardless of their sexual orientation, by not demeaning the questions that young people and all people face about their orientation by using words that we heard earlier today. I think it is so incredibly dangerous to marginalize, to discount, and to suggest that people, particularly young people, as they are discovering their sexual orientation, their sexual identity, that they are less than, and that they don't matter in a fundamental way to them. I believe that our schools, as counter to what Mr. Rustat said, are not indoctrination zones. I think these are places of education and compassion and learning. I feel deeply passionate about this. We need to be understanding and caring, particularly for young people, particularly for vulnerable people, rather than dismissive and somehow seeing them as less than others.
Sharon, what specific measures will you implement to improve access to education and skills training programs, particularly in remote and underserved areas of the province, such as Smithers?
Well, back in the day, we did have a skills training program at the college here in Smithers. We worked hard at getting that up and running, and we funded it. I think it was the Liberal government that funded it, I'm not sure. But we need to get back to skills training and put money into education. And campaigning out there, I've heard from several teachers in different communities that are talking about class sizes, talking about the type of education, and talking about curriculum, and also talking about funding. We don't have enough teachers, and we don't have enough EAs to be able to go around to make this happen. Ongoing education out of high school, there used to be trades training, which should be encouraged and supported, and I'm fully prepared to do that.
Rod, how will your party support the growth of the tech and innovation sectors in BC, and how can these industries contribute to the economic diversification of the province?
Did you say tech industries?
Sure, I'll read it again here. How will your party support the growth of the tech and innovation sectors in BC, and how can these industries contribute to the economic diversification of the province?
Thank you. The you know, we have certainly, and I know Nathan knows this very well, in our district here, there's huge areas where tech is kind of lacking in terms of being able to access Wi-Fi and cell service and so on. But that is definitely, we've seen the growth of that very much in recent years. There's it's extremely important that we interact as members of our modern society in the use of tech. But at the same time, we have to watch that it doesn't transmogrify or morph into a reliance on, for instance, digital currency. That's one of the threats that is coming from globalists around the world. They want to switch us over into digital currency, and then there's tracking mechanisms with that and so on. But we would work with tech industries and help them to get established. Thank you.
Okay, folks, we're on to the Slido portion of the event. So for those in the crowd and those online, if you want to go to the QR code, the slido.com, just moved on me there. And we'll give it a second to let some questions build up. Again, if you need some help, we do have some chamber volunteers that can help you out there. Just while the people are getting those questions going, I want to take a brief moment. We just turned it on now, so we didn't want everyone jumping the gun on the questions. Sorry about that. we're new at this, just pointing that out, so we appreciate everyone's patience with the new technology. As well, I'd just like to take a brief moment to thank everyone for their civility and both the crowd and online. And I'd like to thank the three candidates for being so timely. They've been very, very rigid on sticking to their minutes. So very well done.
Which librarians you have there. We're not going to.
Okay, so the first question, this is for Nathan's turn, I guess. So what role, if any, do you see for private healthcare in the medical system? How will you protect the timely access for people who cannot afford private access?
Yes, so I'm very concerned about the proposals, particularly from Mr. Rustat, for two reasons. To introduce more and more private healthcare into our system. One, is it far more expensive? If you're rich, private healthcare works great. For everybody else, as we've seen in other countries, it doesn't. Second is private healthcare will suck away nurses and doctors and technicians into the private healthcare system. And trust me, ain't no one setting up a private healthcare clinic in Telqua or Smithers or Burns Lake. They'll all be in the cities. Second, Sharon, you asked me where the $4.1 billion cut proposal.
Yes.
It's on page 17 of your health plan that Mr. Rustat introduced 2.5 weeks ago.
Well, I don't see it on mine.
Well, it's on page 17. So
17.
I will say when a leader says we're going to cut $4.1 billion, writes it down and puts it on page 17 in their health plan, I'm going to believe them. That's the way I roll.
Well, Mr. Cullen, Mr. Rustat has said repeatedly there are no cuts to health care over and over and over. How much clearer do we have to make it?
Well, it was
sorry, Sharon, you're out of rebuttal cards, unfortunately, so...
That's too bad.
And the next question on the list is for you, Sharon. Now, what happened to democracy with all those torn down and ripped out NDP signs?
Yes.
I am very happy to answer that question, and I am very, very disturbed by what has been happening. And I mentioned this to Nathan on Saturday. My son came home from Hazleton the day after the writ dropped, and he says to me, Mom, Nathan's signs are all down. What's happening? And I said, I don't know. I got him to send me pictures. And then the day after, Nathan Penner and I went into Telqua because there was more damage, not just to Nathan's signs, but to Rod's as well. And it was very disturbing to see the amount of damage, people driving over them. This is not democracy. This is not what we do. We debate. We talk. We try and engage with one another to find out what they're thinking in it and what you're thinking out there as well. Absolutely, this is wrong. And to have somebody defaced like that is completely... We actually made a call to the RCMP, and they were going to go out and try and investigate. But it's deplorable. This is not what we do in a democracy. This is not what we're teaching our children how to do. It's wrong.
Rod, it's false that drugs cause autism. This month is Autism Awareness Month. How will you educate yourself on autism and the challenges people on the spectrum face.
That's a bit of a misspeak on my point, but anyway, well, that's not what I meant.
Yeah, I should say right off the bat, I'm not a doctor. I don't claim to be. But there are many people who feel that autism is has increased with actually vaccination. Some of our okay, there's a difference of opinion about that. But in the United States, RFK Jr.
I'm going to ask the crowd to please obey the rules and let Rod finish his speech.
You know, one thing that people must recognize is that when I was a kid, there was hardly any autism, and there's a lot now. There's a reason for that, and I believe it's an environmental reason. The 72 vaccinations that people have to get when they're little, some of those, there's a lot of evidence that that could be contributing to the autism problem. So, but I'm willing to do some more educating. If you want to, whoever's posted the question, I'm willing to have a conversation with you, and you can help me learn more about it. But it is a concern, and it's causing a lot of grief in our country.
Sorry, we're not taking crowds from the questions from the crowd here. So please, if you do want to ask a question, go to the app. You can vote questions up and down, and I'm just taking the top question. So, and here it goes. Nathan, how do you plan to promote... Sorry, that just moved on me here. How do you plan to promote schools as a safe space for young people with mental health problems, mental disabilities, and LGBTQ plus affiliations?
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit before. I think there is a misunderstanding sometimes about the role of our schools, that Mr. Rusta talked about them being places of indoctrination. I think that's actually very dangerous language. I think that suspects teachers of having agendas. It puts suspicion on those who are dedicating themselves to being educators and working with students and families and communities to try to raise a better society. I think our willingness and our humility to try to understand where somebody else is in life, what their sexual orientation might be, what their politic might be, is the whole point of education, to be curious and to inform ourselves. And no, vaccines don't cause autism. Vaccines, in fact, eradicated polio. Let's celebrate science when it does things that help society and not spread that kind of misinformation, Rod. It's dangerous, and we need to be in a place of learning all through life.
Just going to review a couple quick things with Slido. We do ask that the questions be generic enough to be answered by any of the candidates up here. So I did see one there that was addressed to one candidate, and we're not going to pick one question for this candidate, one question for that. So please make all your questions applicable to all three candidates. Sharon, how are you going to make it easier for Smithers residents to have access to a family doctor?
Well, it's not just Smithers residents that need a family doctor. I live in Talco and I need a family doctor too. We have to get the doctors back to work. We have to allow them to practice what they have been, what they were educated for, what they're wanting to do. We have to reduce the mandates, get rid of them so that they're welcome to come back to work and not have a registry to say what their medical circumstances are. I think that's none of our business. What we need to do is recruit. There are people in the communities now across the board in the region that are doctors and nurses, registered nurses that I know of, that need to be certified in the Canadian system, and it's taking way too long. So we need to streamline that system to get these people back to work. They're valuable to our society. They don't want to work in a mill. They don't want to be janitors. One of the ladies I know is a registered nurse, and she's a nanny. She's happy to be a nanny, but she has skills, and she came to Canada because she wanted to use those skills.
Rod, firearm regulations fall under federal jurisdictions. How will you address the misinformation of responsibilities and limitations of an MLA on this issue?
I believe in something called the doctrine of the lesser magistrates. No matter where you are in society, if you're a premier, if you're an MLA, if you're a mayor, when the higher authority, higher ranking authority, such as the prime minister, does something that's wrong, and it's wrong for the people and violates their charter rights, it's a responsibility of the MLA, the premier, the mayor, fathers of homes, to speak up against it. And these attempts to grab Canadian firearms based on a very faulty understanding of what's going on in our society, I think it's good. I'm glad that Danielle Smith in Alberta has stood up on that issue against the impositions of Mr. Trudeau. They want to blame firearms for harms caused to people instead of blaming our crime level and our social structures that are leading people to do criminal acts. We need to enforce our criminal justice system, not take away firearms.
Nathan, what are your thoughts on capping rent increases?
Yeah, there was, during the pandemic, particularly, we put a cap, 2%, and no more on rental increases because people were in an uncertain time. That has been moved, but only slightly, and it's adjusted to inflation. There's a proposal from the Conservatives to unleash that entirely. That would be very difficult for people, and especially for questions of affordability. Back to this federal gun law thing, we're a country of laws. We don't get to pick and choose which laws we like and which ones we don't want to enforce, particularly if a law has been introduced to take AR-15s and handguns away from criminals. For someone to say, I want to be premier, as Mr. Rustad has said, as Rod, I guess you're saying, is that we just simply won't enforce laws because of who passed them. Parliament passed them. And they are meant and intended towards weapons that are used in assault-style weapons, not for hunting. Let's be clear. This is not a pick-and-choose kind of federation that we have. We need to be able to enforce laws that keep people safe and make sure that criminals don't get access to these types of guns.
It's a shame I don't have six more rebuttal cards.
Sharon, what specific strategies would you implement to tackle the rise in crime in our area, and how will you work with local law enforcement to improve public safety?
Thank you, George. Having a conversation with one of the RCMP officers here kind of educated me a little bit on the levels of crime. I've sat in meetings with the chamber with Mr. Cullen, and we had these discussions. And the people keep saying that, the RCMP picked them up and let them go and picked them up and let them go. And there's a level of things that has to happen before they're actually incarcerated. But also having a discussion with one of the officers who said part of it is the provincial system, the provincial. So what they're saying is that has to be reviewed. We need more judges. We need more sheriffs. We need more RCMP officers, because there's just far too much to do. And part of that is getting these people home, getting them into the help that they need. They can't be on the streets. They're going to need help, and they're going to need reinforcement to do that. And we need to support the RCMP and the public safety system to get to accomplish that.
Rod, there is strong support across political lines to see more done to conserve BC's fish, wildlife, and habitat. What would your government do to support conservation?
Well, I think a lot of us that live in British Columbia live here because we enjoy and appreciate the environment, the wildlife, and so on. We certainly do. And we should be doing projects to improve habitat where we can, and we should ensure that all British Columbians have access to the wilderness for legitimate hunting, fishing, berry picking, and hiking, and so on. One thing that needs to happen, and I know the NDP is moving in this direction, so we applaud them on it, is the closing of open net fish farms in the Pacific Ocean. I think the evidence is in on that is a potential harm, or it is a harm to wild fish stocks. We have to work on that. We also have to get a little tougher with foreign fishing vessels in our coastal waters, because those fish that are spawned in our streams and rivers should be able to come back so the local fishermen can use and appreciate them.
Nathan, costs like the EHT, 5 paid sick days, and high minimum wage are killing business. What will you get rid of to help small businesses in Smithers?
Well, I think having five sick days is a good thing for workers, and I think it's ultimately a good thing for businesses. Because if a worker is showing up consistently sick to work and spreading illness, not so good. I think it's also a condition that we look at in society, and that every research has shown that the increase in minimum wage in BC has had a dramatically positive effect on the BC economy because of the ability of those workers to not make below minimum wage, which is poverty wages. Their ability to actually go out and be consumers is greatly increased. So when we've done this research with the Chamber of Canada, the Chamber of Commerce here in BC, it shows that minimum wages have a net benefit effect because people who make minimum wage are much, much more likely to shop local than somebody at the very top end of the income bracket who take their money more often away. So I'm a believer in ending poverty, and one of the ways to do that is raise the minimum wage, which we've done.
Sharon, those who invest in BC are punished by excessive top marginal tax rate of 53.5%. Will you change the tax code to attract private sector investment to BC?
I think that has to be done on a case-by-case basis if you're talking about industry. I don't have the answer to changing the tax code at this point in time, but we're willing to have those discussions to accomplish that.
Okay. Rod, how do you plan to promote schools as a safe place, safe space for young people with mental health problems, mental disabilities, the LGBTQ plus affiliations?
Every place should be a safe space for every British Columbia citizen. Let me be clear. It's not a matter of favoritism, Mr. Cullen was referring to earlier. I believe there is indoctrination going on in our schools. I don't blame the teachers. I blame Victoria. I blame the direction from the upper echelons of the NDP government, Adrian Dix, EB, and the rest, who are pushing an agenda, and it is filtering through. I know a teacher in Surrey who works with disabled children. He's a wonderful teacher, but he has been told from on high that he must promote this LGBT program. And I'm just telling you, I don't think it's that all of a sudden all these people have just realized, you know, that they're a different orientation. I think there's been a peer pressure for that, and some of it is coming through our education system. We should be teaching academics and trade skills, not gender orientation and that kind of thing.
Nathan, what is your role to help clean up the polluted communications environment created by disinformation and misinformation to drive wedges into our communities? In a minute.
In a minute, is that right? Well, look, I think that I've knocked on a lot of doors in the last little while. I've knocked on a lot of doors in the last 20 years. And I find that the conversations that I have with people at the doorstep are civil, are engaging, despite whether folks are supporting my party or supporting me or not. Something happens when we go on social media where the algorithms push hate, they push controversy, they push agendas that attract more eyes. I think this is incredibly destructive. I'm glad that our government instructed schools to no longer allow cell phone use during instructional time so young people can focus. I also think our federal government needs to clamp down on these social media giants, because all the evidence is in. The longer young people spend in the social media environment, the worse they feel about themselves, the more likely they are to attempt suicide. And these platforms are allowed to run wild and hurt the psyche and consciences of our young people. And I think it's enough's enough. I think we need federal legislation.
Sharon, what would you do to revitalize forestry and address the impact from the old growth decisions?
Well, that's a good question. Old growth is standing there. It's detrimental to the forest. When I was still in local government, we had these conversations about Tweedsmuir Park. if they would have actually harvested it at the time, they wouldn't have had a fire there because they wouldn't have dry standing timber. When we're cleaning the forest, when they're actually harvesting, they can plant different species that are more resilient to fire. And cleaning up the forest floor so that we're not going to be challenged with wildfires, I think, is another start. But forestry wants to start using old growth and clean it up so that we're not going to be targeted with wildfires.
Rod, this riding is hosting a pilot site for MCFD's Family Connections Centers. What is your plan to provide needed services for children?
The services children need the most is a loving home with a mother and a father looking after them and nurturing them, providing their meals for them, socializing with them, explaining the world to them, and introducing them to other young people their ages. And the interaction of healthy families is the best thing for children. And they, of course, they have the social interaction at school if they're attending school. But we know many families that are homeschooling, have large families, and some of those young people are actually walking in adult shoes when they're 14, 15, 16 because they aren't bound strictly into the age group that sometimes happens in a school classroom. They're interacting with siblings, they're interacting with other people, interacting with adults, and all I can say, the best thing for children is to be in a loving home with a mother and father, nurturing, protecting, guiding them so they become good, productive citizens.
Nathan, we pay the highest home heating costs with PNG, and fuel costs at the pump are ridiculous. What will the BC government do to help us here in the north?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating in seeing that oil prices are $70, $73 a barrel. And I remember when they were at that price before, and gas was not $1.70, $1.80 at the pump. And the delta between that is what some people call inflation, and I call greed and profit. That I've seen companies time and time again say, well, it's just inflation, it's some sort of global effect. Meanwhile, the quarterly reportings from Shell and on down the line show that they're making hand over fist. There is a windfall tax opportunity. It's a taxation policy that's not handled at the provincial level. I think we need better transportation opportunities. I'm very proud of the $10 million we put into the Telco to Smithers bike path that'll be completed hopefully next year. We also need better opportunities to get into vehicles that don't use gas, because that is something that is in our future. And we also need opportunities for people not to have to pay so much for those basic costs of living, like insurance, like childcare. And that's where the opportunities where the provincial government has leverage, and we've been doing much of that.
Sharon, how will you alleviate hospital closures in northern BC and attract and retain healthcare professionals amid staffing shortages?
Well, as we said before, George, we're going to repeal Bill 36. We're going to get the Healthcare Occupations Act. We're going to get doctors and nurses back to work. And it was encouraging to think that Nathan was talking about a new hospital. I worked on that for 20 years, getting the hospital replaced in Smithers, all the years that I was the mayor and then all the years on Northern Health Board. So having these progressive things go forward is absolutely what we need. And healthcare professionals are doing things a little bit differently. I had the opportunity to speak to a local physician who's now retired, but I asked her, I said, you know, what about doctors? And she said, well, they're doing things differently. A lot of them want to be specialists, so they're looking at health practitioners, nurses and doctors to fill some of those spots for like general practitioners in the community. So we've got a lot of work to do. And one of the things that was kind of encouraging to me to get back into politics was healthcare and thinking about how we could make a difference. And it's not going to be an easy fix. We've had things, for the most part, good for an awful long time, and now the world has changed for us. So having to go back and revisit.
Time, sure.
Oh, sorry, I can't see the sign. Thank you,
John. Rod, do you have a plan for how to connect with homeless people and reduce homelessness in places such as our local tent city?
Again, we need to stop enabling a lifestyle that is bad for them and bad for the rest of society. We need to provide mental health services where required so that people can get off drugs and start a new life. They probably need some training and various skills, but just allowing them to basically vegetate there in a cold, damp environment with nothing exciting to do, no meaningful interaction with society, is bad for them and it's bad for us. I think our response to the drug problem is one aspect of that, but we also, where there is a need that's not being met and there doesn't seem to be a path forward, we may need to physically introduce some kind of treatment
and
facility.
That's time.
Thank you.
Nathan, what specifically would your party do to fix the provincial budget deficit?
There's a number of things that are going to be important. One of them is our ability to encourage the kind of investments that a lot of my friends have been talking about. Our ability to advance in reconciliation, not tear up the Declaration Act, which I think would be a huge mistake for a number of reasons, but one of them is also financial. Our ability to fix the Mining Tenure Act, which is required by the courts, and the clock is ticking, is the investor certainty and the confidence that people are looking for. We've committed to doubling community forests, the one here in Smithers, but also right across BC, as a way to reimagine forestry, because we know community forests produce more jobs, are much more sustainable, and that the tenure that the majors are trying to walk away with right now in Vanderhoof and Fraser Lake and Fort St. John need to be returned to their rightful place. Because when a pertinency was cut, as Sharon was talking about earlier, by the Liberals, when Mr. Rustat was in that party, was damaging to so many of our communities, and we're still feeling the effects.
Should have told the three of you before Nathan's turn there. This is the last round of questions, so if you have your rebuttal cards, I think Rod's going to use his right now.
Yeah. I just want to say, you know, when you're trying to cut a budget deficit, which, of course, the NDP haven't been able to do for a number of years, you have to start with a zero-based budget and say, this is what we have to live with. And if there's things that we can't afford, we'll have to put them off till next year. That's what we all have to do in our homes with our credit cards. You just can't keep spending with a credit card and say, well, maybe I'll catch up next year. No, you say, how can I pay down my credit card this month? And you talk to any person who's counseling in terms of debt reduction, you have to draw the line. And that's the challenge for politicians, and I think for all of us, is it's easy to promise things, and then when you go to deliver, you don't have the money for it. So I think we all need to tighten our belt a bit, and as a government, you have to take responsibility and say, this is something we need, this hospital. This is something we can do without, this gender studies program.
Sharon, outline some concrete action plans or steps that you will take to support BC's spiraling forest industry. Outline some concrete action plans or steps that you will take to support BC's spiraling forestry industry.
I still didn't get that.
Are you going to support forestry?
Steps that you would take to help fix forestry, spiraling forestry industry.
Sorry, George, I didn't hear forestry. What steps would I take? Okay. I guess getting people back to work, redoing the Forest Tenure Act, not giving it all to big companies, but keeping it some of it local for small contractors. We've had that discussion before, rather than having large companies come in and take all the wood out of the communities, give back a pertinency to the communities and bring some stability to local governments. These are things that we're still working on. We don't have all the answers, but we're willing to get them. There's so much to do out there that it's hard to have all the answers every single day. We're working on those things, and some of the policies are still under review for the party.
Rod, what would your government do to have more Indigenous culture, history, and language taught in the public schools, WP student grade 5?
Well, we need to have more history, culture, and academics taught in our schools, and I don't think that just focusing on Indigenous culture and history is going to help us resolve the wedge that is being driven between First Nations communities and other communities in British Columbia, especially by this current government. I think our students are really lacking in a general historical understanding of what Canada is, the process, the civic process of having an elected government, and how we're supposed to be represented, what's gone into the sacrifices that people have made to make this country a great place to live. And yes, the indigenous cultures are part of that, and they need to be a part of the education system. But I think we, in general, need to improve our history, literature, and expectations of young people. They're capable of a whole lot more than we have been allowing them to do. So thank you very much.
And Nathan with the final report.
So the question that I as understood it from a young person here at Walnut Park, I assume, was to enhance education about Indigenous cultures and history, and also to acknowledge and understand what roles people like the provincial and federal government took in disenfranchising, putting Indigenous people into residential schools, and what that impact is in real terms. Because when I went to grade school, we didn't talk about residential school. We didn't know it existed. I don't know about the rest of you. But acknowledging and educating ourselves about that history, as hard as it is what brings us to a little bit better understanding of each other, which is the role of a school. I don't see this as a wedge. I truly believe this is the opportunity where we humbly talk to one another and try in that place to make a better province. But ignoring that history, which is what we've done for generations, is a total mistake. So that the young person was asking for the enhancement of it, and I think that's nothing but good, and we are nothing but enriched by learning about other cultures, and particularly the First Peoples cultures of this land. I don't see that as a contradiction to the idea of an education system at all in BC.
All right, folks. I want to thank everyone in person here and online for using the Slido. That worked really well, I think. I also think I'm going to go get my glasses checked tomorrow, but... couple of those were hard to read, but thank you very much. Thanks for the patience in trying something new, and thanks to the candidates for that rapid fire round. All that remains now is a closing remarks. So for the three of you, if you want to come use the podium here, you're more than welcome to. And the first closing remark is Nathan. So you have 3 minutes for your closing remarks.
Now we know.
Podium's yours.
Thank you. Thank you again to the Chamber, thank you to our moderator and hosts. Thank you, of course, to all of you for giving up some of your evening. This is the very lifeblood of our democracy. It needs to be renewed every time. And it's understandable that in an age of misinformation and disinformation, people getting their news about cats and dogs on Facebook and believing in it sometimes, that one can despair about the state and quality of our democracy, and the only way to restore it is by participating, by asking the hard questions. Now, there are, of course, points of disagreement between us here tonight, and that's natural. We come at different, difficult issues from a different perspective. What's important and what's beautiful about living in the Northwest, and what I've always treasured as an elected representative, is that we can still talk to each other, that we can still wrestle with the issues that don't always have simple bumper sticker answers. We need to revive our forestry economy. We need to improve and continue to improve our healthcare system. There was a note written up at the hospital here just this week that a friend took a picture of. And it said that nursing shortages at our hospital in January of this year were at 56%. That of September of this year, they dropped to 29%, cut in half. Not bad, but more to do. We've hired 14,000 nurses new to the system in British Columbia. We've brought back 800 family doctors with a new contract, the first one they've had since 2002, to make sure that we're respecting the healthcare workers that we rely on. A new agreement with ambulance paramedics to make sure that when we call, somebody's there and we treat them with respect. There is so much to do in our province. There's so much to do in our part of the world.
We were able to work with the Tahltan, mining companies, and the federal government to invest almost $200 million into Highway 37 to make sure that our highways are safe and that there is also the opportunity that people are looking for economically. And we must acknowledge and understand the contradictions and the challenge of dealing with crisis like climate change, that it's real, that it exists, that it is something that we need to address, and lo and behold, when we do address it, we can actually create good-paying jobs, that we can have a cleaner environment, cleaner air, cleaner water. These are things that I hope we can agree on, that our ability to do this is not beyond us, but it is something that requires us to work together. We will have points of disagreement. We also can find points of agreement. For too long, large multinational forestry companies have taken and not put back in that social contract is ruptured and in some cases broken. When thank you for all coming out here tonight. I really appreciate it. And make sure you vote and bring someone else with you to the polls who has never voted before. Thanks.
Rod Taylor.
Well, in closing, I want to thank all of you for being here, for your good questions, and for your commitment to the principles of elected representative democracy. We all want British Columbia to prosper and to display the highest level of justice, freedom, and responsible government. For those of you who share my concerns about the issues of life, I must address the elephant in the room. Some of you are wondering how you can vote according to conscience without so-called wasting your vote. Many of you in this room, not all, I'm sure, agree with our policies and principles. In your heart of hearts, you'd like to vote for the protection of innocent human life. In your heart of hearts, you'd like to vote for the biblical principles of morality and justice, but you're afraid to do so. If you thought for 1 minute that electing for the first time a member of the Christian Heritage Party to the BC legislature were possible, you would do it. You would do it with joy and conviction. But for many of you, the idea that a CHP candidate could ever be elected is like a pipe dream. You've been told that a vote for Rod Taylor is a wasted vote. You've been told that a vote for Rod Taylor and the CHP would split the vote and allow the NDP candidate to be reelected. You don't want to take that chance, so you've convinced yourself that you should vote for a party and a party leader who has possibly a better chance of being elected, like John Rustad, who has promised not to touch the sacred cow of abortion, like John Rustad, who voted in 2016 to add transgenderism to the BC Human Rights Code, a little compromise just to get elected, trading the lives of precious babies for votes, what could go wrong? But have you decided that winning an election is more important than protecting innocent human life? Have you decided that abortion is an unwinnable issue, that the killing of the elderly is the price we must pay for electoral success? Now, I know not everyone in this room, not everyone on the broadcast is a Christian, but if you live in Canada, you have a Christian heritage. The first lines of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom say that Canada was founded on principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. In Canada today, we ignore both, but at our own peril. Until we as a nation, until we as a province, until we as citizens begin to recognize the value that God has placed on every human life, we cannot expect his blessing on our crops, on our weather, on our cities, on our economy, or our housing. If we continue to violate God's command by shedding innocent blood, we cannot have his blessing. And without his blessing, we cannot have the prosperity, the security, the freedom, or the justice that we all desire. As you consider how to mark your ballot, I humbly ask for your vote, not for me, but for the principles on which I stand. The idea that I can't win is a circular reasoning. If enough of you vote for me, I will win. If we want God's blessing on our land, we must stand for life. We must stand for family and freedom. Thank you for thinking about what I've shared tonight.
Sharon Hartwell.
Thank you, George. If you don't mind, I think I'll stay sitting. Thank you all very much for coming tonight, and actually for me, returning to this arena has been a privilege.
along with the colleagues, as Mr. Cullen has said, we all have different views, but I think we have an objective that we want to do the best we can for the people that we're going to serve. So thank you all for your commitment. In the closing remarks, what has the NDP done? What legacy have they left us with? An opioid crisis, ER closures, reduced services, an increase in crime and debt. The NDP have promised $400 rent rebate for all renters, regardless of income, for the last five consecutive budgets. They finally introduced it in 2023. It was so severely income tested that many did not qualify. Under conservative government, up to $3,000 per month of rent or mortgage costs will be exempt from provincial income taxes starting in 2026. This is a clear long-term commitment to British Columbians who work hard. The NDP say they will keep car insurance rate low. Mr. Eby, I did receive my one-time $100 rebate. Thank you. But my car insurance went up $60 a month. A BC Conservative government will invest in patients' first model of health care, ensuring that the patient gets the best care that they deserve. Parents have the right and responsibility to determine how and where their children will be educated. Government must provide fair and reasonable funding to families for the type of education they choose for their families. Farmers and ranchers are asking government to provide timely access to permits for water licenses, which have been delayed, to accommodate the growing season. Our communities are filled with people that are committed to providing services that are a necessary part of what makes our northern communities fantastic places to live. I work with an incredible team at Bulkley Valley Wholesale that does just that. They come to work every day to ensure that the northern communities have groceries like Stewart and Dease Lake and Iskut. We also supply the mining and exploration camps, as they are an integral part of our communities. The communities receive a lot of economic benefits supporting resource industries. Rural communities are different, but we are strong and resilient. We stick together and we help one another. The carbon tax is making life in all of our communities unaffordable, and people here are struggling to make ends meet. A conservative government is committed to supporting and working for not only Bulkley Valley Stikine, but all of British Columbia. Thank you very much. Want to see you on election day, and you can cast your vote for Sharon Hartwell, a conservative candidate.
Okay, folks, we've got a few quick thank yous. First, we'd like to thank all three candidates for coming out tonight. It takes a lot of courage to come up on stage and answer so many questions. Random questions off the app and from the draw box. So, thanks to all three of you for making this happen. Also, thank you to the many volunteers and sponsors that made tonight happen. Particularly, the librarians doing an excellent job timing. Stephen with the sound and the chamber crew here that put us all together. Sheena and the board of directors. If you came out and enjoyed this evening, you are welcome to get involved and join the Chamber of Commerce. You don't have to own a business to be a member. You can just pop into the office and sign up. Happy to help you. If your question was not one of the questions addressed, there's about 350 of them or so. We are moving into the round room to continue the candidate coffee meet and greet. So there's your chance. You got about 30 minutes or so to pepper them. And I'm sure they would happily take your questions at their offices or online as well. But thank you, everyone, for online and in person for coming out and making this happen. Thanks for all your civility and your participation. Have a good night.